This is CliffCentral.com. Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to Future CEOs. My name is Gareth Armstrong. It's good to be with you. The first half hour, we're speaking business rescue. What is it? How do we get into it? What's the benefits? And certainly, what are the outcomes? That was our first half hour here on Cliff Central. Now we move into our second half hour. We like to bring really, really, really good CEOs and senior executives into studio and quiz them, interrogate them a little bit about their lives and their journeys. We have done some interesting names. We've done some really good names. We're adding to that list. IQ Business is a brand that I'm sure most of us will be familiar. We have the CEO Adam and then Craker in studio. It's good to have you here, Adam. Thank you for being with us. I know you were just saying off air, it's not Cracker, it's Craker. That's the surname.
That's right.
Adam, thank you for being here. Future CEOs are listening, and we're listening intently. You've done these kinds of conversations before. I know you were saying that a couple of weeks ago you were involved in a talk somewhere where I won't say, because it felt like a medical exam where they were really pulling back the layers. Let's pull back some layers today. We won't quite go the medical route. Just tell us a little bit about your story and your background, please.
Great. Well, firstly, Gareth, it's wonderful to be here. And as I said to your guest as he was leaving, Byron, that I hope I never meet him again.
Yeah, business rescue specialist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was lovely to meet him. But, you know, I guess in terms of my own story, I'm a bit of an imposter in South Africa, perhaps from my accent. Your listeners will be able to tell that I'm originally from the UK. Mm. I've been in South Africa for 20 years and came here with a view that I would spend 2 or 3 years in South Africa and fell in love with the country. I had actually already fallen in love with my wife when we came here together.
Okay.
And we decided to stay, and it's become very much our home and the home for our family, for our children, and we very much enjoy the opportunity and the environment. But my own story, originally then I was born and bred in the UK, just on the outskirts of London, and went through the normal school and high school, university education. Mm. And left university straight into a world of commerce and business in the consulting environment.
Okay.
There's a bit of a story to tell that I guess I shouldn't brush over.
Mm.
And that is that I'm one of four children in my family, so four siblings together.
Okay.
And unfortunately, I lost my father when I was only 8 years old.
Oh,
he
wow,
was 35,
okay.
So
oh, wow.
Really unfortunate.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And thank you. And my mother passed away when I was 17 years
oh, wow,
old.
Okay.
So it was not the most ideal start, I think, in life. And I guess in terms of timing, getting into higher education was going to be a real challenge.
Mm.
But I was the first in my family to go to university and to make a break into tertiary education and have the advantage and opportunity that gave me.
And thank you for not brushing over that story, because I know so many of our listeners are often coming from, we can refer to it as probably a disadvantage in some form or fashion, but your evidence sitting here that disadvantage does not mean you have to stay there. You can certainly move and maneuver around these disadvantages. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you
very
for not
much.
Brushing over.
Yeah.
So you were able to do that. I'm interested in just quickly asking, during this educational period, were there any indications that you had this within you, whether it was some kind of business acumen, whether it was a finance acumen, or perhaps some kind of entrepreneurial flair? Was it evident there, or did this begin to develop later on?
Well, I guess we each of us draw an awful lot from our parents and from grandparents, and both of my grandparents on either side had family businesses.
Okay.
And so there was almost an expectation that I might even tread the path into one of those businesses. I certainly didn't have a view at that stage that I had any business acumen or, and indeed I wasn't particularly academic.
Okay.
And it was only when I got into university that I realized that I could excel academically, and I was very lucky to get into university. It was on the basis, shortly after my mother had passed away, I was offered an opportunity to apply for a scholarship with an organization in the UK called British Gas, which would be the equivalent in the UK of ESCOM here.
Oh, right. Interesting.
And interesting. It would be very interesting if you're offered a scholarship. And I was very, very fortunate to be assigned to a mentor in this great parastatal organization. It employed 90,000 people, so it was an enormous business. And this senior executive really became my guide, my navigator, and really encouraged me to excel. And I spent a year working for British Gas in between school and going to university, which was really a very pivotal time and taught me so much at that stage about what I should be learning at university and how it would be applied when I eventually get into the work environment. And one thing led to another, but in fact, when I got to university, it was only then that I guess, as I would say, I learned how to learn.
Okay, interesting. I need you to explain that, please.
Well, in fact, I've learnt this with my own children now. We would classify the condition, I think, that I had as ADHD.
Okay.
And that I was an absolute fidget pot. And in fact, sitting in the studio with you now, Gareth, is almost somewhat uncomfortable for me because I have this urge to move. And when I was at university, I was told by one of my tutors that I really was not going to be able to achieve very much in the mathematics environment that I was working in. And I was studying management and computer science, and mathematics was a big part of the first year.
A pivotal part.
Very, very important, and carried about half the year's grades. And when I was challenged by the tutor who said, you know, you'll be lucky to pass it, I really set my mind to prove him wrong. And it was then that I really learned how to focus and how to apply my mind and how to pick up the techniques that I should have been learning. And I passed the course in my first year with a first class grade. And went on at the end of my university education to again pass with a first class honours degree, which really was a fantastic outcome.
Yeah, that is. I mean, that is the top outcome, isn't it? So what I'm hearing coming from you, first, I think we really need to understand who we are. This idea of learning how we learn cannot actually be stated strongly enough. Too many people, those in business and out, those who are in school and growing and developing, those who are maybe even toward the end of their careers, in many instances, don't know how they actually learn, what the best way to learn is. And so that's a point well taken.
It's so important, Gareth, that the education system is a bit of a sausage factory in terms of trying to process as many young people through a system to get those youngsters through an education system and into a work environment. And if one is not particularly aligned to the way that the education system works, then there's almost a rejection. And I've certainly learned that my approach to how I pick up knowledge and information and how I learn is in a very visual way, in a very movement-oriented way.
Okay.
And I've applied that, in fact, throughout my career, even to the present day.
The point of learning and knowing how you learn goes into a professional environment. As a CEO now, you have had a number of other organizations that you've worked for, Dimension Data being one of them. I think there's Supergroup here, and then the IQ Business thing started, the journey started there. As you move into these different environments, you need to be able to pick up information as quickly as possible, have a situational contextual understanding as quickly as possible. It served you well there as well. And
very much.
I think that's the point here as well.
It is, Gareth. And to give you the big picture or to connect the dots in terms of the experience. When I graduated from university, the agreement I had in my scholarship program was that I would work for at least a year with British Gas. I started that year and was blown away by my mentor, who pulled me into his office and said, "Right, Adam, it's time for you to leave." And I said, that was not the thing I was expecting you to say. And he said, "No, I think it's time that you've outgrown this environment and you need to embark on another path. And I'm giving you the benefit of my own experience. And I don't think this peristatal is right for you. So out you go." And
so you were fired.
I was pretty much fired. he kicked me out of his office.
Sure.
"Go and find something else," he said.
Interesting.
And I was offered an opportunity with an organization called Anderson Consulting, which is today Accenture.
Yeah, massive group.
And I walked in the door and walked into an environment of extreme training, a fantastic internship, a fantastic program that exposed me, took me overseas to Chicago to go and be trained for the first time. And a career started, which in the first segment lasted for 6 years. And I had tremendous experience and exposure to so many different businesses in the form of projects or clients that I was working in, and so many different leaders and managers that I worked with that really boosted my own experience by having the privilege of that exposure. And then I left Anderson Consulting, and I decided I wanted to do some more studies.
Okay.
So I went over to Switzerland. I was very lucky to get into one of the top business schools in Europe, called IMD in Lausanne in Switzerland.
Mm.
Most phenomenal program with just over 80 people in the program, so quite small, but with around 40 nationalities, 40 nationalities represented in the program.
Yeah, fantastic.
One of them was South African, and we became great mates, and we came to South Africa to embark on a social enterprise that we were going to initiate as part of the MBA program, that was part of the course. And in 1996, we were 2 years after the first democratic elections. There was a degree of uncertainty, but a great deal of euphoria and promise.
And opportunity, yeah, absolutely.
That's it, Gareth. I mean, the opportunities I saw here as a 28, 29-year-old were phenomenal.
Mm.
And at the time, there was a significant brain drain of people leaving the country.
Mm.
And I met people who were saying to me, you know, "Hang on a minute, you have a British passport and you are choosing to come to South Africa."
Yeah, this is the wrong direction.
"Are you nuts?" That's it, exactly.
Yeah.
And so we came, and I actually rejoined Anderson Consulting.
Mm.
I actually had an offer at the time with a South African company, of course, Dimension Data. They'd offered me a position. But I decided to come down as an expat, and I spent 2 or 3 years down here. At the end of that program, Anderson said to me, "It's time to go somewhere else," and they sent me to the Czech Republic.
Interesting.
And I was traveling from Johannesburg to the Czech Republic, and my wife and I said, "Well, look, actually, we've got unfinished business here." So we stayed, and I joined Dimension Data.
Where you became then the group executive for sales.
That's right. I did, which has a story to tell, because it took about 3 years before I actually became the group executive for sales on a global basis.
Mm.
Those that can remember the history in the early 2000s, Dimension Data had been an absolute flying star on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. And when the internet bubble burst, it crashed and burned terribly. And in fact, we had the biggest corporate write-offs in South African history. We had massive shareholder value destruction. We had lots of trouble. And I was offered the job as group executive for sales globally. I was in my early 30s.
Mm.
And it took about 2 weeks to realize why I had been offered the job. And that was because nobody else wanted the job. It was dire. And we had a $2 billion turnover business that was really struggling at that point. But I was part of a turnaround team. And over a period of 6 years, we collectively really steered the business through to a very successful platform.
What's so fantastic about that is that there's two sides to this. First, the question is, what do CEOs actually do? Mm. I've asked that to many CEOs, and there's a very, very strong sales component.
Yes.
And when I say sales, I don't just mean ordinary door-to-door kind of sales. It's this idea of communicating with multiple stakeholders. And
very much.
So sales is a strong, if there's a sales skill or sales ability, I'm convinced that people can be CEOs as a result of that. But then on the other hand, you also had speaking of business rescue in the first half hour, a business rescue element or experience where you were able to look into the intricacies of a business that was in real trouble and sort through it all, find out what was going to work, implement, execute, and then do a bit of a turnaround. Fantastic.
Absolutely. I mean, Gareth, I mean, on your first point, that sales capability is about relationships.
Exactly.
It's about being able to lead relationships and do that on a basis of trust. And as part of the turnaround at Didata, I was traveling during those 6 years. I was traveling up to 200 days a year to 48 countries around the world, constantly in the process of connecting the relationships with our customers and clients around the world, with our stakeholders and suppliers, with our teams in different continents and countries. And at the end of those 6 years, I actually had a very important choice to make, which was, from a family perspective, I couldn't continue to be absent for 200 days a year. Although I have to say, I really enjoyed the exposure and the experience that I had and what I learned doing that. And I made a choice to exit Dimension Data and join Supergroup, the South African-based and listed industrial conglomerate. And part of the attraction was that Supergroup was heading down a similar path, I thought, to the Didata scenario. The turnaround was needed. I joined as the Group Chief Operating Officer of Supergroup. They'd never before had a COO.
Oh, really? Okay.
And the idea was that if I was successful as the Chief Operating Officer, there may be an opportunity to take over as the Chief Executive. But within a very short amount of time in arriving in Supergroup, the turnaround scenario indeed became a rescue situation. We had 12,000 employees. We had a very large business, as I said, listed in Johannesburg. It was a heavily geared or leveraged business, so there was a lot of debt in the business. And it was at that moment in 2008, 2009 that the global financial crisis hit. And the cost of debt spiraled out of control
and then, of course,
big pressure. And then what tends to surface as a result, they say, when the tide goes out, you see who's swimming without swimming costumes on. And the scenario turned to a situation where we started to discover a number of frauds within the business and challenges that led to us having to restate our accounts, and very, very quickly it became a very dramatic situation that needed to be turned around and rescued. So I was part of that team, and we completed the initial recapitalization and structuring of that turnaround.
You started on the idea of relationships, the ability to relate. I think there's a strong empathetic thing there. You spoke about trust. Under circumstances like that, how do you get your team to trust you? At least you can lean on a little bit of experience, so you can just say, guys, I've been here before, trust me. But beyond that, how do you get people to really trust in a process that can be very, very difficult?
Well, I don't know if you realize, Gareth, but the core value at Supergroup during that time was trust.
Okay.
And Supergroup had this whole structure and value system within the organization. What I found within a few months was that value was not being reflected in the behavior in the organization. And indeed, there was a great deal of mistrust, and the amount of challenge from the business issues that we started to surface was a real difficulty to overcome. And that led me to believe that at the time that I felt that I was in the wrong organization, that there was a misalignment in terms of values.
Values, yeah.
And as I mentioned, I worked with the as part of the turnaround and rescue team, and we made a number of decisions to restructure the business and really stamp a new value system, which Peter Mountford, the CEO of Supergroup, has carried forward in a really superb way. And it's taken 6 or 7 years to really get that turnaround complete and to reestablish the trust in the marketplace that the team have really carried forward.
And that's a difficult thing, to reestablish trust. There's a consistency that is required there, that put one step out of line, one toe over a line that where it shouldn't be, and that can all crumble.
It takes years and years to build up that trust. It takes 24 hours to shatter it completely, and then you're back into that year and year cycle of rebuilding and reestablishing the brand and the trust.
So that was then COO Supergroup. Then we move over to IQ Business. Now, we are running out of time, so I've got a number of questions that I'd like to ask. We'll ask a bit of like a quick fire kind of scenario. But just very quickly, your experience with IQ Business?
Right. I mean, it was a very exciting change, a privately owned company. At the time, we had 275 IQers, as we call ourselves, or staff in the organization. The organization has really got a very strong focus and a growth purpose and a growth philosophy around helping our clients to grow and to grow people, to grow business, and to grow Africa.
And you really do get into every part of the business, don't you? I was just looking at the services that you offer, and it's really multidimensional. No stone unturned, it seems like.
Well, we've become, as a result of our purpose and our vision and focus and the work we do with our clients, we've become the leading independent management consulting firm in South Africa. We now have 650 IQers in Johannesburg and Cape Town. We work all over sub-Saharan Africa.
Fantastic.
There's a real culture and a spirit and a huge difference in terms of value system that I've experienced in IQ Business. We're 19 years old, so I didn't start it, but I was a hired gun into the organization, and I've since led a management buy-in to restructure the equity within IQ Business to ensure that the people that work in the organization, the top team, are all owner managers, and that changes the philosophy of the business and has been core to our success over time.
Well, very nice, and clearly you are someone that is worthwhile following. Let's also learn a little bit more from you. Some quick fire questions. We ask lots of CEOs these questions, so let's see how you stack up. Against the other answers, no pressure. What are your three pillars of CEO leadership? So you've done some remarkable things in your career. What are your three pillars of leadership, but more specifically CEO leadership?
I think from a CEO perspective, I think one has to take accountability for what goes on in the organization. So the most important thing is to lead and be accountable for what happens in the organization.
Is there a transparency element there? So how do you take accountability but make sure everyone else knows you're taking accountability? How do you do that? It's one thing to take accountability. It's another thing to make sure that people are aware so that you are actually leading.
Surely. And there's a big difference between accountability and responsibility. I look to my team and to our IQers to take responsibility for their own actions, for what they do, for the value they create for our clients. But ultimately, they understand that I'm the accountable individual within the organization. It mustn't disempower. It must have the reverse effect of empowering our IQers to really move things forward and make sure that the business operates, which leads to the second pillar, which is really around setting the direction, the vision, the strategy. But it's not something that I define. I go into an ivory tower and like Moses, put it onto tablets and then come down and say, there you go. It's a very iterative, engaging process with the team at all levels in the organization, very consultative in the approach. And that's part of the adoption. There's no point having a great strategy or a vision if the organisation's not willing to follow it and behind it. So,
yeah, exactly.
So we make sure that that's really in place.
Yeah, and co-creation, the consultative approach, which is a co-creative approach, is the way to get buy-in.
So much. I mean, it's so very important. And and then the third pillar is really around trust and having fun with the team, because you know we work very very hard. Mm-hmm. We have achieved great things, and we anticipate we're going to continue to achieve great things. And we mustn't take ourselves too seriously. Mm-hmm. In that regard, we must know when to, you know, have fun and celebrate and recognize achievement, and that's really my third pillar.
I like the fact that you put trust and fun in the same place. I believe that it's probably easiest to have the most fun with people you trust the most. And I like that combination. Okay, two more very quick questions before we have to part ways. So the first one, what's the worst advice you've ever received? Worst advice?
Well, probably one of the career decisions that I made, and I probably shouldn't say which one it was.
Fine.
But I had two pieces of advice, one which was very strongly indicating I should move in a particular direction, and another that told me I shouldn't, and they couldn't tell me why I shouldn't. The first person could tell me why I should. I should have listened to the person that said don't do it.
And, interesting.
Because that was a pivotal moment in my career. So I guess it's always important to take opposing views, and then you've got to live with your own decision at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's a good way to go about it. Then finally, in a sentence, this is our parting remark and question. If you could go back and you could talk to the 20-year-old future CEO you in one sentence, what would you say to the future CEO you, 20-year-old young you?
I would say be patient with the journey. Don't try and rush to that pivotal point or to becoming a CEO or a leader. Enjoy the journey. Learn as much as you can along that journey. And you'll know when the time is right. And it won't feel right. There'll still be butterflies. But you know when you're ready to take over the reins and lead.
Well, Adam, thank you so very much. That's the voice of Adam Kraker, the Chief Executive Officer of IQ Business. I wish we had you here for more time, but thank you so very much for this half hour that you have spent with us here on Future CEOs.
Great pleasure, Gareth.
All right, that's the show for today. We have to wrap up now because we're running over time because we've got such great conversations that are happening here in studio. We'll see you same time, same place next week. See you then.
Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.